The ultimate outcome, I would venture to say, is probably longevity on my life. I really do think I was piling the stress on, continuing to think if I just keep working harder, doing more, continue to be that doer, it'll work itself out. And I told Katie, I said, honey, I'll be dead by the time I'm 60 if I don't step back and do something. And, you know, a lot of times when you leave a job and you're not the owner of the company, you step away and you just, you know, take a couple of weeks off, take a breath, and you go back at it, doing the same old thing, expecting a different result. In this, I realized there was more to that.
Well, hey there, if we have not yet met, my name is Alex Judd. I'm the founder of Path for Growth, and this is the Path for Growth podcast. Now, as a business, we exist to help impact-driven leaders step into who they were created to be so that others benefit and God is glorified. Oh, my goodness. Today, I get to share with you a conversation that I had with Gerald Nichols. Gerald is the president of Amber Electric, based out of Irving, Texas. Gosh, what do you say about Gerald? He has been a Path for Growth customer for a long time and is an incredible contributor, and in many ways, a mentor within the Path for Growth community. He's someone that I consider just a dear friend, and he is also a leader that I deeply respect for his experience, for his wisdom, and for his commitment to never-ending growth. There are so many nuggets of wisdom and principles about business growth and leadership and process that are embedded in this conversation. So without any further ado, here's my conversation with Gerald Nichols. Let's start just so people have context of the story of how you coincided with Amber Electrical and what was Amber Electrical like whenever you entered into the company.
Yeah, and thanks for having me back again, Alex. It's fun. It's always fun talking to you and just getting catching up. Two good old Texas boys, right?
That's right.
My association with Amber, the gentleman that founded the company, Steve Kennedy, had been in business since 1989. And he was a friend of mine. We were friendly competitors, knew of each other, respected each other, felt like we both ran companies of high class. And we bid against each other on occasion. But we also ran in the same electrical group. So I was a contractor. He was a contractor. So we'd see each other at events in passing, kind of ran in the same circles. And the really best way to describe when we met and became very, very close were our wives met, and there was a full group of four couples of us, and our wives met, and they bonded. They're thick as thieves still today. They go to life group and Bible study together. I think if they're not in one now, they have been. So that happened, oh, heck, a long time ago, and we just ran and traveled together and kind of hung out. Ended up going to the same church together. And we still do today. As a matter of fact, we had our quarterly offsite yesterday, and I saw him. So, and just good as he can be. But anyway, so when I got ready to sell my other company, I sold it and kind of semi-retired. And I jokingly, seriously say, I retired for about 3.5 hours and said, okay, that's enough. Let's get back to work. And Steve and I just got to talking, and he, just as a friend, it was a friendly conversation. And he said, man, I need to pick your brain on how to sell. He said, I'm getting older. I've got to start thinking about it. And I was a real professional. I had done it once. So I was the guy that needed to consult, right? And he just kind of started asking questions, and I gave him how I went through it. So basically, that was how me and Amber got in together, if you will.
And we should clarify, probably, Amber is the name of the company, not the name of some woman or something like that. Gerald is married to Katie, and Katie and Gerald's marriage is exceptional, right? That's how Amber and Gerald got together.
Yeah.
Okay, so whenever you left your first business, what was the impetus for leaving that business? Like, what was your thought process in leaving? And what did you think you were going to do with your time and with your life after that? What were your plans after that?
You know, and just for clarity, you're right. Amber Electrical is an electrical, commercial, industrial, medical contractor in Dallas, Texas. And I was part of another very similar company here in Dallas. As a matter of fact, our offices were less than a mile apart. And there was just, it was just a time, and I think more than anything, I was self-inflicting stress. And I don't know that it was anything to do with the business. I did have a partner in that business. They're still in business today. As we're recording, they're still in business today. They're still friends. Matter of fact, I owe him a phone call about some stuff that I'm working on. But it was just some of that thing to where I really think I wanted to grow the business a little bit differently than my partner did, maybe. And maybe the way it was structured, it just wasn't the best thing to do. So I just really needed to pull back and just recharge the batteries. I just felt I needed to get out of my own way, clear my head a little bit. And I was a much different leader, I think, at the time. You know, I think that as the owner or the leader, you're supposed to be the guy that knows everything or the person that knows everything. And very honestly, you play your cards too close to your chest. And I didn't know how not to do that. So fortunately, I was able to pull back. And my wife, Katie, lets you mention, we've been married 45 years now. She said, "What are you going to do? You're way too busy." And I said, "For the first year, I'm going to charge my batteries. I'm not going to rush into anything. I'm just going to pull back." And that was really what I did. I know you and I have talked about it. About 2 weeks after, I was really just, I propped my feet up and sat around in my gym shorts a lot. And I just hung around in the house and just, I'd never done that. You know, it was in October, so it was the fall. It was deer season. I was going and fixing up the deer cabin and doing things like that and staying out there longer than I ever had. I was doing a lot of things. I was only 53 years old or so. So I was doing a lot of things I never got to do. So kids were getting a little older. All of them were, I think, either out of college or in college. So, I mean, semi-empty nester, college football fan following the good old Texas Fighting Aggies. And I know that'll get us a jab back. But
yeah, anyway, that's right. Well, good old Fighting Texas Aggies just fired their head coach. So won't go too far down that road right now.
You're right. He's not too dumb. He carried off a bucket load of money.
That's almost $100 million, right? Okay, so before we move too far from your wilderness season, we're not going to park too long on Jimbo Fisher's wilderness season, but let's look at yours. When you look at that time, like, was your mindset, well, this is just my life now, this is what I do? Or did you very much view that as this is a season before I get back into the game?
Yeah, it's a great question. It was very much a season before I get back in the game. I had actually already started debating that thought process, just thinking, you know, I just want to change. And I use the comparison a lot of times. It wasn't like our two businesses were that much different. So I just wanted to join a different country club. And I didn't know which one it was at the time, but it was just like, I want to do it a little different. And the main portion, part of that I felt like I knew, even at the previous business, was I knew that there was a greater good. I knew that I felt like there was a greater mission. You know, we should be, not that we weren't very friendly and we shared the revenue, you know, with our employees, we sponsored families, we did things, but I just felt like there was more. And so I just needed to clear my head, just step away. And one of the things that we do now, which last thing I wrote in our quarterly, is take that clarity break. You got to really step away and get your mind right. And you can't do that once a year. You have to do it sometimes once a month, sometimes twice a week. It just depends on what you're working through.
Can I pause right there real quick? You're a very ambitious guy. You're a very creative leader. I think you would describe yourself using EOS terminology as the visionary in your company, right? And I would describe you, Gerald, just in my time knowing you, is like, you're a doer. You're a very hands-on, like tactile, like you enjoy doing the work. And so it's really interesting to say that person was able to intentionally take some time off and just say, I just need a clarity break before I enter into my second half. What gave you the ability to actually take that time? And looking back now, what do you think the ultimate outcome of that time was?
The ultimate outcome, I would venture to say, is probably longevity on my life. I really do think the stress was, I was piling the stress on, continuing to think if I just keep working harder, doing more, continue to be that doer, it'll work itself out. And I told Katie, I said, honey, I'll be dead by the time I'm 60 if I don't step back and do something. And, you know, a lot of times when you leave a job when you're not the owner of the company, you step away and you just, you know, take a couple of weeks off, take a breath, and you go back at it, doing the same old thing, expecting a different result. And this, I realized there was more to that. And being the doer, and I'm still in really decent health, I think, for a 65-year-old guy. Still get out, still get to do quite a bit. But you also realize that your goal or your mission in life is not being an electrician anymore. You know, at some point when you realize we're in this for the greater good and for, you know, like our mission says, serving others and positively affecting lives, it didn't have anything to do with being an electrical contractor. So, you know, I had to step back and really go, what does this really mean? And that was the thing. It just gave me that pause. I mean, and I'm sure, I know you're a Texas guy again, so country western music, sitting in a deer stand does a lot of things for you, whether you have a rifle or not, whether you're hunting or you're mad at the deer or not. I'm not even mad at them anymore. I just love being there, listening to God's peace, listening to the water drip off of the roof of the thing. I listen to the creek run when the water is in the creek, watching God's creation and just appreciating the things that for so many years I didn't notice. You know, the sunrises, the sunsets, you know, things like that. And a lot of it's to do with age, Alex. I mean, you know, but the one thing that I try to tell our guys all the time, I need you to start thinking like I'm thinking now at a much younger age. You'll have a much better life. Mm-hmm. So I try to share that with them all as much as I can.
What is that mindset you would love for them to adopt? Like, what are the thoughts you want them to have about their life?
Enjoy the sunrise. Enjoy the sunset. Smell the roses. You know, working harder will make it better. Isn't necessarily always right. You know, just step back and enjoy. Do things for the purpose that you were put here to be. We were all put here to love Jesus and love others. It's that simple. The simplicity of the OS model, our mission, our values, you know, what we're for, you know, it's really funny, you know, it's just, the simpler we make it, it seems like if things aren't going right a lot, we want to change. Well, wait, let's stay at our roots, go back to the mission, go back to the values. And it's really funny, you know, your team, when you start hearing them saying it and doing it, it's like, good, I can just sit back here by the paint on the wall and let them do their deal because it's working.
Hmm. Man, I really appreciate, too, that you kind of highlight in that in-between period that time in the deer stand was the transformational thing. Because I think myself, I can do this, and especially lots of young guys, but honestly, just people in general, especially people in leadership positions, can say like, okay, I've got a year off. Now give me the intentional plan that I need to walk through to make sure it's the most productive year off I've ever had. And yeah. It sounds like part of what made that time so life-giving and transformational for you was the fact that you didn't manufacture productivity. You just kind of focus more on being than doing for a period of time. Does that feel right?
100%. It was just settle down, back off, you know, enjoy raising grandkids with my wife. I mean, she came in, I think that I was going to say this a while ago, I got sidetracked, but the first 2 weeks I was here, we had a 6-month-old and a year old baby girls. Grandbabies. And she said, you take the older one, I got the younger one. And for 2 weeks, that was our life. Hope and Paige, they're, you know, much older now. But anyway, for the second week, I said, my God, honey, I owe you an apology. She said, for what? I said, I had no idea you did this our whole life. I will get up early, go to work in Dallas, you know, 50 minutes away and come home. And I got 4 boys. All grown now, but you know, they're fed, they're clean, their homework's done, they're getting ready for bed or whatever they're doing. And I'm thinking, man, what'd you do all day? When it took me about 2 weeks to realize she did way more than I ever thought that we did. So again, some of the appreciation that I was, you know, walking by every day or getting up and leaving before I even knew what went down, you know, because I'm one of those guys that was raised to, you get up, you work, you're the breadwinner of the family. No disrespect to whoever is the breadwinner. But I was raised in that family, and she wanted to be home with the kids, and I understand why. But I had no idea what went into it, especially with four knucklehead boys.
I love that. Okay, and so it's kind of out of that season that this owner of Amber Electrical approaches you, and he's coming to you just saying, hey, I saw how you sold your portion of the business. I need insight because I think I need to do that for myself. And somehow that conversation transpires into, well, maybe this is the business that I'm supposed to buy. Can you walk us through the discernment process that you kind of went through to make that decision of, okay, I'm entering back into the game and this is where I'm going to do it?
I didn't really have a target, you know, place of where I wanted to go. But Steve has three daughters. And again, we were just having lunch. Here and there, we might have played golf a time or two together, you know, and I think we skied a couple of times. But we didn't mix. If the other people were around, our wives or whatever, unless it was just him and I, we didn't really mix that. It was strictly fun or strictly business, you know. And he just started asking about the buy sale. How do you do that? I said, well, Steve, why don't you just sell it to your daughters? And, you know, there'll be a woman owned company, which could have advantages. And he said, well, I couldn't even hardly get those girls to come up here and answer the phone in the summertime from high school or college. So I don't think they really want to be a business owner of the electrical. And I said, well, okay, I understand that. And I said, so, you know, I'm assuming if that's the case, the son-in-laws, maybe they got involved, and he would never really be able to retire because he had the electrical background and none of them did. So I respected that. And he said, I just don't think that would be a good fit. And so we started, you know, discussing about, well, what about the employees that are with you, that have been with you for a long time? Because we have one employee that's with us. Steve had a previous company before he had Amber with a partner. Only lasted 4 or 5 years, Dan Sanchez. But Dan he was with Steve. So we've been in business 34 years, but we say Dan's been with us 39. So, you know, Dan's one of the original guys still getting after it. But he just felt like that some outside input needed to happen. So during that conversation, I met him one afternoon we just got together, maybe had a beer or something. And he said, hey, why don't you got four boys, two of them are in the electrical industry themselves, and two of them are in construction in general. So why don't you buy it? And I said, well, you know, that's kind of the long game. That's the plan. But I didn't think about being a friend, you know, a friend. I probably was thinking more of a startup, you know, maybe, which I did have a small startup in there. But anyway, I thought, well, let's kick that around. So That's kind of how that came. And then at that point's when I went back and approached my family, and then we kind of started the wheels turning that direction.
Can you give us a picture before we dive into a little bit more of the journey and the decisions associated with it? Can you give us a picture? Maybe it's number of team members, maybe it's size of projects, maybe it's revenue, but give us a picture of what the company was like when you entered into it. And then can you also give us just a snapshot of where the company is today?
Yeah, the company at the time, it was actually June 1 of 2018 when I entered. That was the official buy date. Company was probably 70-ish, 75 people, but start brought up from 1989. You know, he started with four people. So that's pretty good size growth in 30 years. And so our goal there was to, hey, because we weren't in it in my former company, I was actually working in the business and then bought it with a partner. This particular time, I walked in off the street and, you know, Steve told his people, hey, guys, we sold the company today. Here's your new owner. And I knew half of them, you know, so very much a risky situation on our case. I mean, they could all said, I've heard about that guy. I'm walking out, and they could have gone, and they'd all had jobs that afternoon. But many of them, you know, just wanted to hear, what are we going to do? And my deal was, I'm not a new coach in town. I'm not bringing a whole new coaching staff. I'm here because of y'all's reputation. This is why I'm here. You guys have a great reputation. Steve has a great reputation. So that's what brought us. So we came in, didn't make a bunch of changes, started growing a little. Of course, there were some folks, you know, there was a few competitors out there that kind of said, oh, new sheriff, things are going to change. Y'all better bail while you can. We're hiring. Come on. A little of that went on. But the majority of them, you know, we know people in the industry, and we respected each other. And we just kind of stuck in there, figured out the culture, started kind of looking at leadership and who was leaders. And we started growing it from there. Slow process as a visionary. And those people that know visionary integrator type of personalities, I'm almost a textbook visionary by the rocket fuel assessment. And things never happen fast enough for me, and everybody knows it. But if I pulled that card that it has to happen at my speed, it'd be a wreck. It'd be a mess. Mm. So when our team reins me in, filters me, Nathan is my oldest son, and he's our COO, and he's the integrator, does a great job at it. So they dial me back. We're very much different, and he's very good at doing that. And then the team that he has assembled, or we have assembled with him, very good as well. So today, rough snapshot, we're about 120 employees. So we've grown the company revenue-wise. We've had our largest year last year. And I really had to talk about dollars, because our mission is to serve others and positively affect lives. If we do that, the revenue comes. But, you know, we're largest year we've ever had last year. Going to have we're going to be a tad off of that. There was just a little bit of a setback in the economy for us this year, but a lot of it was too we were being more intentional in using the Path for Growth healthy growth approach of, you know, we're telling a lot more people no, and we're being really, really picky. So the upcoming for 24, we have our largest backlog in the history of the company. So a lot of good, great things happening. A little scary, because you know, the manpower situation or workforce situation is not getting any better. But in construction, it's been that way for a while. So anyway, that's kind of a snapshot of where we are and how we got there.
Yeah, that's really helpful. There's so many things on that I'd like to zoom into. One in particular, was there a specific area where when you entered the company, it was just very clear to you, like, man, it's in the best interest of everyone in the company that this eventually changes in some regard? Like, is there a specific area that you can think of like, okay, we're going to have to change some things here? Does something come to mind there?
It really does. And the guys that have worked for the company now, James Jones has been there 28 years, Carl Crenshaw, 30 going on 31, 32. And there's others, but there are a couple of key guys in the leadership team. One's a VP of operations. The other's a VP of pre-construction and sales. And they both laugh about this, but the way Steve had done it, and Steve even admitted he stuck around for several months, you know, it was part of the deal. But when I came in and with Nathan as executive VP and COO, he was really trying to get his arms around leadership and what was existing and what we could build on, the pillars we could build on. And we already kind of knew, but and that was just gut feel from industry, you know, the word on the street, basically, that we knew. And the company was somewhat siloed. So Steve started, he had his customer base or whatever. Then he kind of outgrew what he could manage. He brought in another project manager, and then you kind of bid it. And, you know, you bid it, you project managed it, you invoiced it, you cleaned it off, whatever you did. And then when that project manager got outdone, the next one would come in. And it was a little bit siloed of different business units. I mean, so much to a fact. This is where I laugh. These guys are going to hit me with an egg or something when they see me. But that there was a couple of times it happened where they're sitting in the offices across from each other and bidding the same job to different customers and didn't know. So that it only happened a time or two that has mentioned, but it happens because, you know, you kind of got to that point where it was no longer a mom and pop shop in that type thing. So we, when, you know, it was pretty obvious that, you know, we had four estimating guys, four project managers, no sales. We still don't do very much sales and marketing. It's basically repeat customers. There's several of our customers we've been doing, Amber's been doing business with for 30 years. So out of the 100 and something, 35 of them, I think, go out to a semiconductor manufacturing plant. I just don't use their name. You all know them, but they're right out there, part of the maintenance staff, and go every day.
But I think, Gerald, I think this is really interesting right here. Like, it feels to me like what you're highlighting in terms of what you came into is unity does not happen naturally. It's like naturally, as things start to grow, it's like it's not even necessarily because anyone's out to get anyone or anyone's acting with malicious intent. It's just like division. Like, people have different visions and people get in their lane, and they're probably even compensated in such a way that it actually incentivizes them to care disproportionately about their lane. And so that's what they're doing. Now, what's really interesting is, like, you enter into the company, and you even said whenever you entered in, you were very cognizant of the fact that I do not want to be the guy that comes in and changes everything in the first 90 days, because people are not going to trust that guy. And at the same time, I could imagine, like, you could see stuff that it's like, you're like, oh man, this is going to have to eventually change. Like, we're going to have to eventually do a little bit of work on this. What was the process of initiating change to ultimately sew unity into the team and into the structure?
Well, that may still be a work in progress, but that's change. So, you know, it was an evaluation, and during the due diligence process, Steve and I had a lot of conversations, and Nathan was brought in, you know, at a point relatively early once we kind of agreed that this was what we wanted to do or pursue. I mean, it was not a done deal, but we just kind of wanted to look, and Steve had given us, he said, my technology's not where it probably should be. My accounting system's probably not where it should be. You may want to make some changes and that type of thing. So, you know, we kind of went in, and he said some of my tools and vehicles are maybe needing replaced. You know, I mean, he's retiring. He's heading out. There's no reason him to spend a bunch of money. And but his primary thing of all things, he said, I will take less for the company. It's the character of this gentleman, Steve Kennedy. He said, I will take a less for the company so our guys have a place to retire. It's the type of person he is. And that's still that way today. So he worked towards that. And with the understanding, but yes, they have to own it. He said, of course they do. And have to earn it. And he said, of course they do. And darn near all of them are still there. And several of them are still here. And so, a few have retired. So, and a few others are right, you know, around the corner. So anyway, we set out what our goal was. Our goal was to, we're friends now. We're going to stay friends when it's done. Still the case. So, you know, that's hard to do. We tried out trying to start using the same lawyer just to keep it that simple. That didn't end up panning out, but that's minor. So the thing that first came in, you have these guns a-blazing thoughts, you know, obviously. I just think, I mean, when you started Path for Growth, I know you're the same way. You have, okay, I want to do this, I want to do this. Well, the technology was aging. They didn't use laptop computers until 2018. I was the first laptop, me and Nathan, first laptops in the door. You know, then the accounting system was still DOS-based. I mean, things like that, you know, they were working fine. It didn't need to change in his case. Everybody knew how to use it. It was all good. But then it just got to that point of where with loving Jesus, loving others, positively affecting lives, that was something that really had not been put out there because those were my values. You know, I didn't want to enforce them on others. And the core values of that, I could go to another company tomorrow and the core values could be different, right? Because if the people are different. So we just tried to observe who could be the leaders and who were. And I think from my time after I sold the other company that I realized you don't have to get in a hurry here. You know, even as a visionary, nothing happens fast enough for me. Some things just take time. You know, it takes time. You don't go to the gym one time and you have the body of what you want. So I realized that, but I wouldn't have realized that if I wouldn't have spent that time in the deer stand and said, how do I need to do it different? What do I need to do? So technology was one, and I'll say breaking the silos, not in a bad way, but we had to compartmentalize and departmentalize certain things, get control of what we wanted to bid, what we didn't want to bid, what we did say yes to, what we didn't say yes to. And there had to be a process. And when the guys that bid the maybe the same project, there just wasn't a process. There wasn't a thought process that went around, hey, should we take it, should we not? Anyway, so I mean, lack of process is still always a big deal. We're working on that right now. I mean, that's another path for growth observation is you operationalize, you document, and you improve. It's never going to change. Infinite game.
Because process is not probably what we would say is one of your strengths necessarily. And it's not one of my strengths, right? But we both know, okay, well, if I'm being an effective leader, I'm leading in such a way that processes within our team are the result. And so as it relates to this topic of introducing processes and instilling processes, what do you view your role as? Like, how do you engage with the team in such a way that it does happen, even though it's not necessarily a strength of yours, Cheryl?
You know, you and I, we don't need any rules. We don't need rules. We don't go by rules, right?
Life is way better without the rules. That's right. I feel.
Yeah. Yeah. Today's process will be different tomorrow. So why do we need any of that? But I think I've actually gotten much better at it because I see the importance of it. Mm. And we're actually going to have a trainual training in the near future with some of our team members. We've been using trainual for about, we started in December last year. And it's a slow process. It really is to get it rolling. But you try to use examples. And there's a book called Process Out. It's part of the Traction Library. And, you know, their example in there is making toast. You know, there's 7 steps and 8 if you have to get the bread out of the freezer or something, you know. But in my case, it was like, wait a minute, let's just use something simple like buying a company vehicle to put it on the road. Well, I know how to do it in here. And one of my other sons that works for the company, Josh, he helps us with that. Him and I kind of know the whole deal, but it's in here in my head. So I started writing that down on a board one day, and it's like, there's like 12 different steps to get a van on the road and 10 to get a pickup truck on the road. So if that's a really easy example to show someone that, hey, this is what it takes. And here's the deal. If we need a pickup truck while I'm on vacation or, you know, whatever, anyone can do it. And it's access, and it's right here, and it's in one central location. And people start seeing that. So that's where that process portion, I'm seeing the importance of it. Now, being able to share that and carry it on, and I'll show you or give you an example here in a minute. Process is important to things that are important for our people. For instance, trainual. Or the process, whatever you use, trainual is just one we chose. In order to get paid, you get reminded on trainual, you know, and we have to do our hourly timesheets. We're hourly employees. Then we also include our bonus structure so we pay them quarterly, and we have rules on how they met. It's a scoreboard. We send that monthly profit information out there, and then. In order to take PTO, you have to put it in on your. Guess what the top 3 visited items are on trainual? pay, PTO, bonus. So it's just that's where you see the importance. It's important, people. I get it. So that's
well,
where
I
you
love
see
that too, because I think so often whenever it comes to process or whenever it comes to installing a new CRM or a new platform like Trainual, we do great with initiation and we do really poorly with adoption. And what I hear you saying in that is like, if you want adoption of this new process, this new program, this new software, focus on the things that matter most to the people that will be using it. Right, which sounds a lot like paychecks, bonuses, and PTO. It's like you better believe they will move heaven and earth to figure out how to use Trainual. Like you won't have to send them messages about their login information very often if you get that stuff in there.
Not at all. And the other key to it's have a champion of it. You know, we have my assistant is actually our champion of it. She's excellent at it, and she was not from the industry. She was actually. You know, she's my newest daughter-in-law, actually, Natalie. And I just said, let's keep pushing it, keep pushing it, keep pushing it. And she does. She does a great job with it. And it helps when you have that. As a matter of fact, Drew Lancaster, I think, in the community, you know, him and I were talking about it. And I think we're going to do a Teams meeting or a Zoom meeting and kind of help him, show him where we're at. And he's in construction, so we can share information and he can just, you know, change what he needs to change.
I love that. Yeah. I love that you use that language too, because that's language that Zach on our team has been using recently. Is there's so many people in the Path for Growth community right now that are passionate about the idea of operationalize, right? Which is standardize, document, evaluate, improve. And Zach brought up in a meeting the other day, he's like, the people that are winning with this are the people that have identified who the champion of operationalizing is. And oftentimes I think visionary leaders fall for the lie that it needs to be them. And I don't think they need to be the champion. I think they just need to make sure that there is a champion. And it sounds like, and maybe this is the case with your assistant, there are people in your business that not only will they champion processes in your organization, that's like their dream job. And I think I had to open my mind to the idea, there's like actually people that really love this stuff. And because they love it, they're really good at it.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, Natalie was working for a company before she came to us. And she actually came just to help me out. I said, hey, she had a couple of days off a week. And I said, hey, would you mind helping me for a day and just to kind of help me, you know, help me with email and things like that, appointments. I was getting overwhelmed. And she said, yeah, I'll do that. So she had been working at a company. She was in accounting and she just was miserable. She said, I'm not actually really good at math. And I've had a little bit of problems with this and all. And then she started inputting our accounting processes, and our accounting manager, Stephanie, does a great job at doing it. And Natalie said, well, heck, no wonder I wasn't any good at it. Nobody ever showed me this clearly how to do it. And it was so there's just things like that, you know, a picture's worth a thousand words, snippets, whatever you put in, but it is. And it's like, man, I can get it, but it took me 100 times to get it. I don't know why they can't get it. You know, and we hold people, you know, we hold them to a high standard or too high of a standard because we may or may not have trained them properly. We may have not given them all the tools, but we expect them to know. And, you know, sometimes we don't even ask the right questions. Hey, do you know how to do this? And they're, you know, they'll answer you if you'll ask them, but sometimes we don't give them the shot.
I'd love to zoom in on your relationship with your integrator, who is also your son. But let's first talk about the visionary integrator relationship. And then I'd also like to talk about working with family, because I think those are two separate topics. Just to kind of clarify for people, you know, EOS is the group that popularized the language of visionary and integrator. And really the idea typically in its most generalized form is that the visionary of the team is oftentimes the founder of the organization, but not always. They're more wired as a leader than a manager. They're very creative. They have a lot of energy. Oftentimes they're really good with people, but oftentimes they struggle with consistency, stability, and accountability. It's not to say that they can't grow in those areas. It's just not their strengths being those areas. Meanwhile, the integrator is the person that is a very stable personality type, loves operations, loves processes, is very good at managing an executable system, and really thrives in that role. And basically, the principle that's presented in the book Rocket Fuel is that when you put those two things together, what you actually get is a full CEO. And that CEO is able to work together. I'd love to know, just in you and Nathan working together, what are the lessons you've learned that you're like, man, if someone's entering a visionary integrator relationship, these are some things I want them to know.
You know, that's your evaluation of EOS is exactly spot on. And honestly, if there's another can of goods out there, I'd love to know about it. Love EOS. Don't plan to move away. But you know, that's just what works for us. And I think I told you before, I looked at a lot of different places, but this one just resonated. And then when I presented it to Nathan, he said, you know, I see this right too. And I actually went to the all the ones that I thought would be on our leadership team that had interest in it and said, if you'll read this book, plan to help and go with us, there's a lot here. but it'll make all of your lives easier with me leaving you alone. So they all kind of said, oh, well, then this may be worth the investment. So the visionary integrator portion, the very first thing on his accountability chart or success statements that we refer to is filter the visionary. So I'm allowed to have all the stuff I want to come up with of what could work, what should work, what may work. But he's the doer. He's the one that says, okay, typically when we go to our same page meetings, we pick 2-3 items, and that's all we're allowed to move the ball on. If I get sidetracked in the weeds, he has the right to pull me back. We're not talking about those today. Those are later. They'll stay on the list. And our VI meetings, our same page meetings, have gotten to be phone calls a lot. We've got 2 offices now, an office in the one closest to my home, and he's up in the Irving, Dallas-Fort Worth area. So we do a lot on the phone, and that's very effective because we both live. He's about 40 minutes from his house. I'm about 50 if I come out of Irving. But, you know, it's very easy to get down into that. And then, you know, we can talk each other off the ledge. I'm upset about something. He's upset about something. Well, okay, calm down. Let's work through this instead of going and upsetting the entire team. We actually had all week this week. We've been with meetings for planning the future, getting into year end. And our CFO was with us and our attorney. And the attorney that we deal with, he does a lot of estate planning and things like that. And he said, I work with family business all the time. And he said, I've never seen anybody work as well as you two do. So we've defined that through respect of each other. You know, and I've got a couple of buddies when we went in business together. One of them said, don't screw it up. I wrote that on a business card and it sticks on my computer. And my wife said, if y'all screw it up and get crossways, I'm not picking your side. I'm picking Nathan's. I said, okay. So that's pretty tough laws that I have to go by. But but he's a smart guy. Nathan's a smart young man. One thing that's key, and we spent a lot of time talking about this yesterday, was we use Culture Index. And I know, you know, DISC, Enneagram, however, again, Culture Index is like our EOS model. We just work well with it. And it just tells you more about yourself, and you learn about yourself and how to work with others. I mean, we got a dynamic team, but we're not all geared to do what we are. I'm geared to go sell. One of my guys that...
How is Nathan geared?
He's the same. He's the same, but I'm the guy that 100 ideas a minute. He's the guy that I can give him a couple of ideas, plant the seed, water the seed, water the seed tomorrow, kind of stay after it, you know, prune it a little bit. And then when it needs to hit, it hits. He's very good with timing. But again, he's bouncing it off the other team members, you know. So he's wired a little different. And I even said that with our Culture Index coach when we were talking. I asked him, I said, Robert's his name. I said, Robert, how come he's not getting the way I'm saying it? He said, Gerald, he can't. He's not wired that way. So I had to respect that. And until our Culture Index evaluation was able to tell us that, I just was thinking, man, I don't know if it's going to work. And that was, you know, I wish I'd have known it when he was a teenager. He'd have probably got in trouble less. But, you know, because supposedly your wiring is your wiring when you're about 15. But no, it's been really, really good. I'm very fortunate to work with all of my sons, really, because the two, Nathan's the oldest. He's a COO with us full time. Brandon's a fireman and has a construction business on the side. And he does a lot of work for us. We do work for him. He just finished quite a bit of work at my house. The next one is a fireman, and he's a project manager for us. He's an electrician also. And then the youngest one, Tanner, he works for a general contractor here in town that we do a little bit of work with. So we all have interesting conversations, you know, but a couple of them chose so far not to wear the company jersey, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. So we have a good mix of balance and of what's going on. But it's really, really cool to be able to work with your family and do it successfully. But really keeping that in mind of don't screw it up, you know, and that's on me. And these guys, your guys, your age, you know, you are my replacement. I can either get on board with it or get over it. It's going to happen, you know. So just because they don't think like I do doesn't mean they're wrong. And they're gonna survive. They're survivors. So, you know, it's really cool. And when you start having grandkids and you see their wiring and how they're thinking and things like that, it really has a different spin, different perspective on how you look at the long range of things. The things I used to get all worked up about, they never made a hill of beans anyway, but I probably made them the beans. So
I've become honestly very enamored with the CEO, COO structure or visionary integrator structure. It's what Zach and I operate on at Path for Growth. And it's what we honestly advise people do as part of our role chart fundamental in the Path for Growth 12 fundamentals for healthy growth. And as such, there's a lot of businesses that we get to coincide with in our coaching relationships that is the model that they're running with as well. And I have really come to find that there's a couple of distinguishing factors of pairs that can make it work and pairs that can't. And I'd be interested to know if you have anything to add to this. But one of the things that I see often, and this is true in my relationship with Zach, is like, I have to really trust that person's competency to such a degree that I'm cool with them standing toe-to-toe with me and telling me no. And it may even be founded that I don't trust that, right? Like, I've coincided with business owners that they kind of rush the integrator hire and they don't actually build that trust. And then when this person tries to tell them no, they're like, "What? Who are you?" Like, no way. But what I've found is that unless you build that trust where you're like, I am going to, in some ways, operate in mutual submission, that there will be times where I sit in the passenger seat and allow this person to drive. If you don't opt in for that, I don't think you get to experience the blessing and the fruit of a visionary integrated relationship.
Yeah, it's absolutely correct. And the thing, Nathan, it wouldn't hurt to have a safe word if you need it. And Nathan and I are still really good. At work, I'm Gerald. At home, I'm Dad. At work, if he calls the dad card on me, I know it's time to step away. Rarely does he have to do it, but I also have realized that I'd love to say we're a flat organization, but it's not that way, because if something's going, you know, he's my only report and I can hear all the conversations that's going on, but I have to really, really, really back off and not say what I think and without going through him. Because as the CEO and or CEO, and Nathan is a part owner now, he does have ownership in the business. But my conversation just, hey, if I was doing this, I would think about this, becomes a command. And I've used that quite a bit. You got to be really, really careful. The boss said to stop what I was doing and start this. And I may have never even said that. It was just conversation. So you have to be, and it comes across a little bit with our staff that I'm a little, maybe not as conversational as I used to be or whatever, because I have to really make sure that I'm not upsetting the fruit cart. And, how are you doing? How's the family? What are you doing for Thanksgiving? All that good stuff. We can have those conversations, but that's about, you got to be real careful going much more than that. So use that all the time. Our conversation will become command if you're not careful.
That, man, that's so good. I had a team member recently tell me, Alex, I find myself reflecting on the week and realizing I committed to things when I was talking to you strictly out of a desire to impress you because you're the owner of the business. Yeah. And they're like, not because it was actually something that my leader would want me to commit to or that I should necessarily be spending my time on right now. And it was like, it was so helpful to get that feedback, because it's like, we got to be really, really, I think, deliberate about, like you said, the conversations that we're having and the expectations that may not be stated, but might be implied just because of the weight that CEO or owner has.
Right. And you know, you're not just one of the guys anymore. And I struggle with that because I am that doer. I'll go out and help you put in conduit and pull wire. I may be in the hospital next week, but I still would like to do it. I will help unload a truck. I'll help do that. I'm not too good to do that. But you know, sometimes you just have to, you got to really And you got to really just know where you belong. And even with Josh, my son that works with us, he's a fireman and part-time, well, he works almost full-time here. But anyway, he's project manager, and he'll ask me something about the business. And it's like, Josh, you need to go talk to your reports and things like that. And then I got to remember, it's employee to employee, not father to son. And he's never trying to undermine anything by any means. His heart's in it, just like everybody else. He's in for the greater good. And so it's a good setup, good dynamic. It's really, I was really wanting Nathan work for my other company before. And I saw the opportunity of us being able to do that. I didn't see that possibly going over there as quick as I thought it could. So that was part of the move too. Mm-hmm. He was exhibiting great leadership ability and all. And I just felt like it would behoove us to do it. So that was good to see. You know, again, you're reflecting back. He's just a guy in the field at that point, but you saw the potential, I guess, in him.
Can you speak to, you've told me a story before about Nathan's I get it moment. And could you kind of share that story and why that story is so important?
Yeah, there was, you know, we were really, even after we came over, I had a plan and a feel of what I wanted to do. And I felt like that Nathan would be on board. And he was. But, you know, when you get over it, it's overwhelming. I mean, you don't know the people. You want to make sure you know them. You want to figure out the processes, figure out the software and all the things that you're doing. And, you know, you got to conduct business. You got to get money in and out of the door too, right? So, you know, there was, I kept telling him, and I want to say it may have been right pre-COVID. So maybe we were in the business a year and a half. And for some reason, I want to say I was at home, working from home that day. And I said, Nathan, you just got to trust me. I said, you and I are electrical by trade. You're business degree. I'm not. We can't do this by ourselves. We do not know enough about business, basically, in general. I'm paraphrasing, but it was like, we got to have some help. So I said, look, give me 6 months and let's try some coaching. You know, we'll outsource it. And at the time, it was Ramsey Solutions. And I think you were actually onboarded me over there. I think it is where we met. But anyway, so, you know, I was trying, and I still felt like that Nathan was still a little bit just trying to appease me. He was going along with it. And so we went to a master series, I believe, out in Tennessee during that COVID time frame. And we were sitting in some of the conferences day two. Don't recall who was speaking. I forgot everything once this happened, but he leaned over to me right at the afternoon break, and he said, Dad. And I thought, uh-oh, what, you know, that dad word. But he said, I get it now. And I said, what do you get? He said, I always thought this coaching stuff was a money grab. But after hearing whoever it was had just spoken, and I don't remember, he said, I understand what you're trying to get us to do. And that was, you know, that was worth the entire trip. We took him and his wife, me and my wife out. And, you know, we got to experience some really cool things, met some great people. And he just said, I see what we're headed. And that was the game changer. So I don't know. And you'd almost have to ask him that. You'd have to say he could probably nail down exactly what it was. I think he saw that, you know, the best golfers in the world have more than one coach. The best baseball players, they have help. He's a sports guy. His son's, you know, works out like crazy now just to try to keep that going. I think it just kind of connected the dots. I think, but again, that was that pull away moment. We were out of the office. We were in another state studying to get better, to grow a business. And he had that aha moment when he stepped back. I'm going to call it a clarity break, and went, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, there's so much that's so powerful for leaders to take away from that. One thing for me, even just as a CEO, but that I would encourage the other CEOs to take from that is like, I mean, that was conservative estimate. That was a $10,000 to $12,000 trip. And that's a conservative estimate, right? And Gerald just said, like, worth every penny. Why is it worth every penny? Probably not because of the entire list of action items that came out of that trip, although I'm sure there were action items that came out of it. But man, if you can facilitate a light bulb moment for someone where an executive in your company starts to look at growth, leadership, business in a radically new way and gets them started on a personal growth journey that never ends, like, number one, that's going to change their life, which is such a powerful thing. But then you don't think that's going to make up in $12,000 like overnight? Like, if you can level up an executive's energy, inspiration, level of performance by 10% over the course of a month, you've paid for that trip. And so, you know, as we kind of enter into a new year, I just hope people are thinking about, how am I developing my people? How am I changing the paradigm through which they see the world? Because I think that's the opportunity that's available to visionaries. Gerald, a phrase that I've heard you say a bunch of times is workforce development, workforce development, workforce development. Why is that something that you're so passionate about?
Well, you know, the workforce development, and not construction, I don't care what it is, you know, things have changed. When I was a kid, you know, someone took a chance on me. I went and knocked on a door, went to work. Well, we've changed the way that that comes about now. And there's a lot more opportunity than when I traditional college, trades, manufacturing, military. That was about my options. And when I graduated high school, I didn't know which one. I wanted to play baseball, but, you know, that didn't pan out. So I needed plan B. So I went into manufacturing. And then an electrical friend of mine referred me. He said, hey, man, you ought to check on this electrical. You got family in it. So what I look at on that is Rick Waldrop's his name. He's still in business. He went to high school a few years ahead of me here in Ennis, Texas, where I live. And he said, just go chase that. And when he did, I look at that as he was someone that just took a chance on guiding me when he saw that college, traditional college, wasn't for me. And so I say, just somebody took a chance on an old country boy and just said, hey, if you'll show up on time, be a sponge, and you're not a turd head, you can make a living. And that's kind of our contract.
And I think you've made a living, Gerald. I think you did it.
Yeah. But the thing is, you can't mix that up with, because I became a journeyman or became a master or became I owned my own business, you still have to do the work. I mean, work's a four-letter word for a reason. Nobody owes you anything. You got to go earn it. And you got a continual learner and all that. But workforce development to me is just, Alex, I go in schools. I was in one this morning. You talk to these students about what they think, and you have instructors that maybe went to school, then went back to high school or grade school to teach or junior high to teach. They may or may not have had the exposure to more of the world that's going on. And you know, your mom was a teacher, right? So she can probably tell you that thing. You know, we as industry owe it to those teachers to go back in there and talk to those students and tell them about life and encourage why math, reading, spelling, communication, showing up on time is important. And I think, you know, the talking heads, the students get tired of it. I got tired of it. Why did I need algebra and geometry? Poor Miss Dean, rest her soul. You know, I'm sure she thought, boy, if Gerald would ever run a company, she'd roll over in her grave. But, you know, it's just that we owe it to us as industry, owe it to those teachers to go and give them a break and let help them create our future leaders. And that's where my workforce development is. I've got grandkids that are part of this. I got others, you know, again, that's why I go to the church on Wednesday night and work with kids. It's just to tell them about the good news the Lord put us here to do. And that's my thing. And it's workforce development, but it's really just people development. Just tell them about opportunities in life and be there sometimes when someone needs to go, hey, I got a problem. Can you help me with something? You know, and just listen, be an ear. Parents are busy. You know, these days, I was listening to one of the talks they had at the church last night, and it was just so true. If you got more than one kid, it's very difficult to pay as much attention to them as you really need to, with dinner, with homework, with bills, with their jobs, with the other kid, an illness or whatever. Sometimes a stranger or a friend that maybe somebody's met somewhere can be that ear to help them win. So.
I just love that you're spending so much time in the high schools. Like, how much time are you spending in the high schools? And what is the nature of your time there? Are you giving talks to classes, or are you sitting at a booth during lunch? What does that look like?
No, it varies. The other day, the last one I went to, actually I went today to just follow up with those teachers, but they come in for the first period of the class, and they had four or five classes in there, and myself and a dentist were in there, and we both kind of gave our stories. And actually, she's my second cousin, so, you know, small town stuff. But anyway, so we know how that goes. But we both talked about how we depend on each other. You know, she can't do her business dental chair without the electrical industry, and I can't do mine if I don't have good teeth because I'm not healthy. So, you know, she talked about her science background and this and that. But it just depends. Typically, it's talks. Sometimes it's going in with, I have a really cool display I use with batteries and getting a light, and I'll get the safety manager, the foreman, the city inspector, the lead, the electrician. Then we'll wire a light using basically a battery as the power supply. And you'd be surprised how, especially 6th, 7th, 8th graders, how much their brains connect to the science of that, because they know how batteries work, but they don't get to see how they work a lot of times. And someone coming from the industry, it makes a difference. High schools and actually trade schools like Texas State Technical College, you know, was up in Waco. They've got 10 campuses statewide here in Texas, and actually getting that ready to add two more. Collin College, Northlake College. I mean, there's so much of this that is out there. We go in and just, if somebody will give us a microphone and a platform to talk about the opportunity in what you can do. And by the way, you can also, if I wasn't geared to be a traditional college student, I could be an electrical engineer now. I'm not, but I could be, because I went out of order, if you will. So I could have gone to trade school first and then paid my way to get that electrical engineering degree or a business degree or whatever. Nathan did that. He didn't get degreed right out of the high school. He was going to be a coach. He had a little setback in there where he said, you know, I just need to do a little work and make some money and go to school. And he ended up getting a bachelor's degree as an electrician. He had a full-time job, got his bachelor's degree in business. And he did that after he had kids. And he said he did it because he was going to have preach to his kids. They needed to go to college, and he felt like he should have a degree. And his wife went to Texas as well. So, you know, it's different strokes for different folks.
Yeah. Do you get talent? Does Amber hire talent because of some of those efforts that y'all are doing?
We do. A lot of times we will hire the students right out of high school. And, you know, we teach them from the ground up. We typically, if they meet those three rules I mentioned earlier, we will pay for their way to go through trade school. I've got a student that his parents wanted him to go to traditional college for a semester. He went over to Texas State Technical College here, not far from me. And I said, hey, if you'll take these two courses in December or January, we'll hire you. He called me mid of December a couple of years ago and said, well, I like the school so much, I took five courses. We hired him. And, you know, he went right to work. And he has an interest in robotics and things like that. He's going to be a great guy, too. So, yeah, we do. We encourage them, try to put them on a path. We use Trainual as well. There's a great, you know, the organizational chart in there shows you. When we're interviewing, we can say, here's where you interview, or here's what we're interviewing for. In 6 months, you'll go to here, and your range of pay will be this. 6 more months, and then go up. And in our industry, you have to be an apprentice for 4 years or 8,000 work hours, and then you become a journeyman, and then two more years or 12,000 work hours, you become a master electrician. You have to be a master to own your own company. So, I mean, there's a definite railroad track of how to get to a great career.
But man, it's one of the things that I love so much about what y'all are doing, what Herb Sargent and that team is doing, what Drew Lancaster and Holly Hill are doing. Y'all just all seem so passionate about, like, okay, we can sit around and play the game that everyone else is playing right now, which is complaining about entitlement and lack of work ethic and labor shortage. Or we can, like, I don't know, do something, right? And it feels like what you're doing is two things. It's you are, like, passionately communicating about the opportunities that are actually available. Number one, because so many people literally just have no clue what you can do as a master electrician and how like that's a, I mean, that's an incredible life that you can lead if you step into that. And so you're spreading that message. And then number two, I think what y'all are providing maybe better than, I mean, a lot of the school system right now, if we're not careful, is direction. It's just, you know, it's, I think people respond so strongly of like a here to their journey. And if you show people a clear path, it's like, oh my gosh, water for their soul almost.
Yeah. Well, and you can actually validate what the teachers are teaching, because I did that with the sixth graders the other day. Hey guys, y'all wonder why you need to spell. You wonder why you need to do math. You wonder why algebra. I use it every day. This student, this sixth grade level is getting you ready for this is the base of your life. They're setting the foundation. They're not getting you ready. That's up to me. That's not up to the teachers. They're getting you prepared to go along, but you have to show up. You have to be able to communicate in a, you know, you have to be able to write a decent resume, letter, document of some sort. You have to know when to capitalize. You have to know when to have a period, even though the computers help you with all that now, right? But back in the day they didn't, but it's, you can validate and tell them the teachers do know what they're doing.
That's so good. I think that's so necessary, because it seems like it's the popular talking point now to criticize education. And it's like, okay, well, you know, you can sit around and criticize the education system all you want. But first of all, the education system got us to where we are. So there's something to be grateful for in that, maybe. And then also, it's like, are you doing anything about it? Because if you're not doing anything about it, then you should probably just keep your mouth shut. And so
the education system, there's a good book, and it's going to slip my mind. I was going to mention it, but it's, you know, that gum and I had it. Anyway, it talks about, you know, the schools get everyone. We can run off people we don't want. Schools can't. Right. So those school educators are planting shade trees for shade they'll never stand in. They'll never even know. And if we as industry can go validate that, what does that give those teachers? What does it give those students? All they need is to hear it from one. That particular day, the dentist and I spoke, both very passionate. She was a volleyball player in college and all that, very passionate in different manners. She's female, I'm male. Guys, you can do something. You can be successful. And if you're, if you're in a family, I hate it that, you know, maybe you're in a family that may not have that opportunity, be the first one to do it. I can help you with that. You may not even be working for my company, but if you show interest, maybe I know a guy that knows a guy that knows a lady that knows, we'll connect the dots. If you want, all the business cards, you call me and we'll get them. You know, it'll be funny. 2 years, a senior that graduates this year will call me in 2 years and go, hey, remember when you came to our school and we were talking about this. He said, I'm 20 now. I think I better do something with my life. Well, come on down, kid. We'll help you.
So, you know, that's pretty good.
It comes back. And you got to be patient with it. It's only one or two at a time. I'm not bringing in 200 out of the class. You know, it's a few. And if we can get one or two or three or four, we're just moving the needle. But I can complain about it, but I choose to do something about it.
Yeah, I feel like that's a theme for so much of what you choose to do is like, are there imperfections? Are there areas where it's not perfect? Sure. And literally no one is denying that. Like any knucklehead can go about finding the imperfections. Like it takes a leader to be about finding solutions. And so I just appreciate the way you and now even Amber Electrical as a whole is investing time, energy, and money into that. Final question for you before we go, Gerald, because you're so passionate about investing in young people, let's pretend you're having Texas barbecue. First of all, what's your ideal Texas barbecue location that you'd invite everyone over to?
Anywhere with Meat Church on it. Okay. I don't know. Actually, we do pretty well with this stuff. You know about Meat Church, so that's.
Yes. I think most people know about Meat Church nowadays. Yeah. He's right down the road from y'all. Okay. So you got 12 young business owners, and you've got a huge thing of brisket and sausage and all the works in front of you. And you've got a few minutes just to share one thing that you want to make sure they all hear about business leadership or life. What's the biggest message you want them to hear?
You know, Alex, it's pretty good. I wrote three questions down that I didn't come up with these. Someone presented them to us yesterday in our offsite. And I thought they were very fitting for the day. And, you know, I challenge you to do it. Think about this. The question is, the first one, there's three questions, but they all start out with, in the next 10 years, okay? So in the next 10 years, what experiences do I want to happen? Personal and business. The next one is, what do I need to grow in? Personal and business. And then what is my or our contribution to the world or community, personal or business? And for a young leader, and you're younger, 30, 31 years old, think about where you were first off 10 years ago, okay? Think about how you've gotten to where you are. And I think if those business owners were roughly your age, you know, how fast did it go? Because I guarantee you, I told those sixth graders this the other day, I can't ask them to go back 10 years, you know, they were one. But I said, 2 years ago, where were you? So you always think about that. What do you want? What experiences do I want to happen? What do I need to grow in? And what is our contribution to the world or the community? Those are three things that when I start putting that down and looking back where I was 10 years ago, I was right in the midst of that sale of that company. And here I am on Medicare. Thank you all that work and pay for that, by the way. So, you know, it's that thing of you know, don't rush it. Reach out for help. You don't have to know it all. There is so much help out there. And it's okay to move your cards away from your chest a little and share and ask for information. And two, don't get caught up in too much noise like I have done. I feel like I'm on the EOS book or Audible for about somewhere over a dozen times now. Figure out what works for you and go with it. Figure out what works and go with it. I guarantee you, Bill Belichick still is running somewhat similar to the playbook that he started when he first got in New England 20-something years ago. Not going too well for him this year, but, you know, he won't go down without a fight. So that's my thing. I think that's what I would say. And we could sit there all day and talk about different approaches and all. But if I were to go buy another business, there's three things I would do. EOS, fractional CFO, culture index. It's the first thing we'd start with. And then you go values, mission, all that. And it would be a game changer. And be patient.
Yeah. And what I hear in that is, have a playbook, right? Mm-hmm. That like you follow the plan, right? For Gerald, that was EOS. Know your numbers and don't just like casually say our sales were better this year than last year. Like delegate that and hire someone. I know you use Michael King. Michael King, it has become a friend of mine. Thanks to you. He's been on this podcast. He spoke at our experience and his team just such a stellar job. And it's like so many people, if they just knew their numbers, they could blow the lid off their business, right? And then third, know your people, right? So know your playbook, know your numbers, know your people. And it's wild how those three things, if you've got a system for managing it, man, you can just blow the lid off things. So,
and it may not be in that particular order either, Alex. You know, it could just be, you know, when I came to Amber, it was probably the people first. Then we could go to that next step. But depending on where you're at and what your experience is. So there's no order to it. But the main thing is that there's order. You know, there's some, okay, we're going to do this. 3 months, 6 months, whatever. So yeah, that's the key, I think.
That's right. Gerald, there's certain people that when I coincide with them, I can just point at them and say, man, that's a person that's on the adventure. And you, and I would extend this to Katie as well, y'all are people that I uniquely think of as, man, those two, they're 45 years married and they are on the adventure. And so I so appreciate you being part of the Path for Growth community, you investing your time here today. And more than that, just the fact that you're living it, man, it's such an inspiration and so cool to see. And so appreciate you.
Yeah. And just in closing, I have to get that Go Rangers in there, Alex. I know we had that bet on the World Series.
Well, so. Yeah, I'm far from an Arizona Diamondbacks diehard, but it still breaks every competitive bone in my body that we lost.
So, yeah, absolutely.
We'll see you, Gerald.
Okay, take care. Thank you.
Well, I hope that you were able to extract value from that conversation. And I also hope that you were inspired about Gerald and Amber as a whole's commitment to reaching the next generation, not with a posture of entitlement like we deserve better people, but rather a commitment to investing in young people and helping them grow. I'm so grateful to Gerald for his time. And I'm also grateful to him and the Amber team for the way that they are truly making a difference and making an impact in their community. Y'all know this. We're rooting for you. We're praying for you. We want to see you win. Remember, my strength is not for me. Your strength is not for you. Our strength is for service. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go.